if you really think about it, and granted, the Panthers are 0-2, and the Cardinals are 0-1-1. So this story has very little juice around the entire NFL. But you can't help but look at it. There's going to be a lot of people thinking, wait a minute, how often do you get this? A quarterback is coming in to replace a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback to play, have his first start in the NFL in his hometown. And he's going up against the quarterback that he beat out for the starting position at a college when they were both two of the highest-ranked quarterbacks in the country.
Yum.
That's what you've got, Kyle versus Kyler, when it's Carolina versus Cardinals.
That's pretty good right there, Doug Lease, but it's not Patrick Mahomes and his dad. All right, I'm just saying that on September 15th. That was good. That was close, but it's not Patrick Mahomes.
They were in my ear. Did you mention the history between Kyler and Kyle Allen, who once upon a time, not too long ago, competed for the number one quarterback spot at Texas A&M? In their respective recruiting classes, a lot of the services had each guy ranked as the number one recruit in the nation. At least the number one quarterback recruit.
That's incredible.
And I can tell you, when I was doing the Pauly Pancake makeup thing over at Channel 15, we went over and did a story when Kyle Allen was in high school at Scottsdale Desert Mountain because his big receiving target was Mark Andrews, who just torched the Cardinals last week. Those guys were on the same high school team. And Kyle Allen, we walked into the football office, and there were two plastic full-size garbage cans, like you put out at the curb, and they were filled with just materials and mailers that everyone had sent him around the country. Media guides, letters, every college football program in the country. And chatting it up with him and some of the coaches, you realize that he was leaning at that point towards A&M. And they had told him, you're the guy to replace Johnny Manziel, Kyle Allen. That's why he went to A&M. He replaced Johnny Manziel. Now, it didn't work out. He got a number of starts. He got replaced. There was Kyler Murray. The two of them were competing. So it's a very interesting backstory to this whole matchup on Sunday if Cam doesn't go.
That Texas A&M program fell apart fast. Woo! I'm not trying to take a shot at U of A right now. It was unbelievable how many good players were winning recruiting battles, and all of a sudden they get there, and it's like they couldn't wait to get out.
So what's fascinating about that, Paulie, obviously 2015, right? That was the year that you're talking about right there, where Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray, they both were at Texas A&M, and the Aggies started that season 5-0, ladies and gentlemen, with Kyle Allen, of course, as the starting quarterback.
One of the wins?
5-0.
Against ASU, having Christian Kirk run right past me
there
on the punt return.
There you go right there. Right? And then all of a sudden, he threw three interceptions against Alabama. And that put him on notice. And then he struggled in a loss at Ole Miss the next week. And then Kyler Murray was named the starter. Think about that.
Interesting. I did not know that's how it played out.
Think about that right there. That's, again, just researching it myself, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully the research is on the money and somebody didn't
leave. That's a good story if it's not.
That's what it is. No, that's what it is right there at Texas A&M in 2015. That's what went down. How interesting is that Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen actually have a history together?
So, and I wonder where the relationship stands, because they're obviously they both transferred out. So was there issue with each other? Was the issue with Sumlin? Was the issue with the program? But they both clear. In fact, I think if you look, there were like four top quarterbacks who transferred out in a 2 or 3 year period.
Yeah, it got ugly fast under Kevin Sumlin there at Texas A&M. And of course, there's 900 different stories and versions of the stories of what happened with those two. I think it was simple that I don't think they believed the coach was sticking with either one of them. You know, I think both of them felt like, if I'm coming here and I'm the guy, let me make my mistakes and quit going back and forth between us. Neither of us are going to grow this way. And it probably made sense for both of them to leave.
And I was just saying, now think about it. So Kyler Murray was the number one pick overall. Kyle Allen went undrafted.
Yeah.
Last year going into the draft, he went and worked out with Sam Darnold and Josh Allen. They lived in the same house. And Jordan Palmer, Carson's little brother, was working them out, getting ready for the draft. He went undrafted. and then has gone the hard way and didn't make that start in Week 17 last season, and he didn't even complete the game. He ended up with a shoulder injury leaving in the fourth quarter.
So stop and think about this right here. Kyle Allen was demoted to third team, right? And then he announced his transferring in December, right? He was demoted to third team. And then a month later, he committed to Houston, University of Houston, right? And he was going to play for Tom Herman. But then, of course, Tom Herman left for Texas before 2017, remember? And Allen was benched in his third game after throwing two picks, giving him four picks in three games. So he was replaced in Houston. And, you know, again, I know that Carson Palmer's brother, what's his name?
Jordan.
Is it Jordan? I was going to say Jesse. Is actually working and has worked with Kyle Allen in the past, right?
Yeah, leading up to the draft last year.
He said both times, Kyle Allen got host.
Yeah.
That's what Jordan Palmer said.
You can understand why he was sick of college football and was ready to go to the pros, or at least give it a shot. And here's Ron Rivera talking about Kyle Allen and, you know, his mini scouting report.
Well, I think he's got a really good arm. You know, he makes good decisions. I just think at times, as you watch him, he just needs to speed himself up a little bit, because one thing he will have to get used to, obviously, is the speed of the game.
Rivera pretty honest there on Kyle Allen. He had that one start, and he was pretty decent, but once again, he didn't actually finish that game, but they beat the Saints. Saints were headed to the playoffs last year, you know. So he was 16 of 27, 266, and three total touchdowns, Kyle Allen, last year.
I'm excited for this kid. I still think I stand on the prediction from yesterday. Cliff Kingsbury gets his first win. Congratulations for the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. You
but know, I said that before we even had any idea Cam Newton wasn't practicing.
Cam Newton! Well, listen, one of our own in Kyle Allen, right? From Desert Mountain, one of our own here. It's really interesting the way this is coming together right here. Just the fact that there is history with these guys, and it's so disjointed as well. The fact that all the way back in 2015, here they are competing for the same job.
Oh, can you seriously? A&M. Can you imagine the hype if this is Week 7 and both teams are about 5-2, 6-1? I mean, it would be, if it was later in the year, it would be one of those flex to Sunday night games.
Yeah,
you never get a story this juicy in the NFL, and yet since it's 0-1-1 versus 0-2, and there's an injured Cam Newton, and it's like, okay, the rest of the nation's like, oh, what? What?
Can we all agree that Kevin Sumlin can recruit? Can we all agree on that right there? What a master recruiter he must be. Just loaded at talent at Texas A&M.
How can you not think, though, Carolina coming to town with a backup quarterback, how can you not think of that Vinny Testaverde game about a decade ago?
Oh, my gosh, you're
Remember
right.
that Vinny Testaverde off his couch the same week, and he comes
lit
in
up
and
the Cardinals.
Leads Carolina to a victory. I mean, that was just a kick to the head.
That's a good one, Paul. Have you subscribed to the Doug and Wolf podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Doug and Wolf podcast brought to you this week by Kinetico. Coming up next, let's take a look over the block wall at every 2-0 team in the division. Uh-oh. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Seahawks, 49ers, Rams.
Best from the NFC West. Doug and Wolf give you an inside look at the Cardinals' division rivals.
We do this every Wednesday, look around the division, see what's going on, and to be quite frank, we don't like what we see. Cardinals are 0-1-1. Every team we're about to talk about is 2-0.
Seahawks.
A 28-26 win over the Steelers. The Seahawks right now are 2-0 in the AFC North as they hosted the Bengals in Week 1. Two close wins. And according to Pete Carroll, it's all about his man improving.
It's hard to imagine that somebody could keep getting better when you're year 8 or not, whatever it is, 7, 8, when we 8. Yeah, you're right. You know, how could that happen? But it's happening. We're watching it. And so, he made errors in the game, you know. He missed things in the game that he won't miss all the time. And most of the time he'll get them. And, you know, but it's the position is that hard and there's that much going on that they have, and he has so much opportunity for control.
At least from my perspective right now, the thing that sticks out to me about the Seattle Seahawks is, yeah, they're trying to rebuild the Legion of Boom up there. There's no doubt about it. But number 4 Number 4 in rushing yards per game allowed and number 10.
Number 4.
And number 10 in rushing yards per play allowed, Batesonians. Think about that right there, right? That has always been at the heart of the Seattle Seahawks in their defense. The Legion of Boom, again, has always been about stopping the run and then getting you into some third and obvious pass situations and then getting to your quarterback. Number 12 in sacks per attempt, of course, this year, but they've given up an awful lot of passing yards. That secondary, not what it once used to be, as we all know.
This would have been a brutal stretch with Drew Brees healthy. But the Saints back-to-back NFC West road games at the Rams last week. Now they're going to Seattle without Drew Brees in the lineup to take on the Seahawks. And according to Pete Carroll, the Seahawks will have one of their weapons.
The expectation is that he's going to play this week.
That is Ziggy Ansah.
And it's just taken us this long to get through. We want to make sure that everything was right, and he was right, and mentality was right. He had enough reps. He's had 3 good weeks of work, you know, now behind him, and he's in really good shape. He's worked really hard. He's in terrific condition. So he's going to be able to play, and if he gets through the week and everything goes well, and he'll play a considerable amount, you know, because he's practiced hard enough to do that.
I love listening to Pete Carroll. I really do right now, right? The words that he uses from time to time. Mentality, he actually said about Ziggy Ansah. Mentality, mentality, mentality. There's been a lot of coaches that have actually questioned the mentality of Ziggy Ansah. Interesting. Mentality. What is it, Ziggy?
49ers.
Well, they just smashed the Bengals. The 49ers, first 2 games of the season, both on the road. They still have 8 home games remaining, and they're 2-0, and they finally get to have their first home game. They take on the Steelers at 1:25 on Sunday. Kyle Shanahan, did you expect that you would be one of the best offensive teams in the NFL? Be 2-0 on the road when you finally come home?
I mean, we expected to be, but I've been in this league long enough that I know that no matter what you expect, I mean, it's hard. It's very hard to win in this league versus whoever you play. I mean, we know we have a better team going into this year. I think we played like it in 2 games.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about it? They really have kind of struggled in the red zone. Haven't been great in the red zone, but they have put up some points, of course. They've scored points. They've moved the ball. Offensively, they're able to run the ball and throw the ball, but more than anything else, Basedonians, they have really protected Jimmy G, number 2 in the National Football League in sacks per attempt. They've done a good job protecting Jimmy.
Do you have a 6th round pick out of Vanderbilt starting on your offensive line, Kyle Shanahan?
He's very efficient in what he does. He's getting better at it each week. And those are the type of guys that I do like as a lineman. I mean, O-line, it's a grimy game. I mean, there's lots of stuff that they have to do, and it's fun when they pancake people and get noticed for that. But usually guys get noticed when they whiff on people and the quarterback gets hit or they hit the back 4 yards deep in the backfield. So it's about getting on your man.
He's talking about Justin School, who, oh, by the way, I don't know if he's very smart, because he went to Vanderbilt, he was on the freshman SEC academic honor roll, and then kept doing it in his second and third years, missed 5 games due to injury as a freshman, and other than that, started every game as a Vanderbilt offensive lineman.
Yeah, they're playing really, really well on defense as well, the San Francisco 49ers, and that really isn't surprising because John Lynch wanted to build that defense from the ground up. And through 2 games right now, it's a small, small sample size. But through 2 games, they're holding up well.
Rams.
27-9. They beat the Saints somewhat with Drew Brees. Sean McVay. You're starting to see a little bit more from Gurley, but is it time to split up some carries?
You know, it's hard to say right now, just through 2 games. You know, I think they both have done a nice job. As the season continues to progress, I think we'll really find out. And like we've said, each game kind of represents a different approach.
Well, I don't know if anybody noticed, they got Gurley into the end zone quick in this game, and it seemed to fuel the beast.
Well, I think it was important, really, for our team. And you always want to be able to see your guys, you know, produce and be able to, you know, be rewarded accordingly. And he's a special player. He's been outstanding for us, and I think he's going to continue to, you know, be more and more important and as important, really, as he's always been for us, Gary.
What's really interesting about the Los Angeles Rams, of course, and their ability to run the ball is the fact that they're number 7 in the National Football League in yards per game. Now, again, it's all a very small sample size. Not until we get 4 games under our belt, Basin Onions, are we really going to get a true feeling for how a team plays and what it is that they do. But through 2 games right now, the Rams average 140 and a half yards rushing. That's good for number 7 in the National Football League right now. And they're 4.53 yards per carry.
It's obviously working, the run game, yet there is a little bit of a dynamic of a soap opera underneath with everything that happened with Todd Gurley
last year.
Then they approached Todd Gurley and asked him about splitting carries and whether or not if that's the new normal for him. Todd didn't really like it.
Ask Sean, not the head coach.
I'm not the head coach.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. They're also doing very, very well on third down. Not a surprise to anybody, right? They're very good. They have been since Jared Goff is good. Since Goff got good. Right? They've been a good team on third down. And it really is no surprise when you think of the Rams and their offense and the way they're able to possess the ball, move it down the field. But third down, they're elite.
Rams, Sunday Night Football. That's your marquee matchup on the road against the Fighting Freddies of the Cleveland Browns.
The Fighting Freddies. Did you just make that up?
I did.
I've never heard that. You've never heard that from anybody.
No, I have not.
The Fighting Freddies.
I did just make that up. For
one of the most esteemed organizations, franchises in the history of the National Football League, they're going to reduce it not to anything else other than the Fighting Freddies. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they're the only franchise in the history of American professional sports named after a man.
Yes.
So why not double down and say the Fighting Freddies?
The Browns. I used to love wearing their jerseys, especially the dirty brown one. It was so nasty. It was. The orange helmet. You basically went out there and wore the colors of the diarrhea spectrum, ladies and gentlemen, and I loved every second of it.
So you didn't want to give it away? Give it away?
No, I didn't, as a matter of fact.
Oh, give it away, give it away now. Give it away, give it away, give it away now. Give it away, give it away.
Man, I love that.
Coming up next, would you do it? Should Steve Keim do it? One for one. Your guy that asked for a trade for our guy that asked for a trade. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, Cardinal fans. Do you want this guy?
All I care about is winning, man. Everybody know that. I want to win. Straight up. Now, I excuse my language, but everybody know that. That's who I am. That's that passion, that fire, that heart. That's what y'all love. You feel me? And I'm going to continue giving that as long as I'm here.
Ron Wolfley floated something out yesterday. Didn't get a really... spend a lot of time on it, so let's just absorb it, let it wash over you. Do you want Jalen Ramsey in a straight-up trade for Patrick Peterson? If you got two guys that are both requesting trades, now granted, Patrick was last year, and he committed, he apologized, said, I want to be here.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, turned around and in his show of how bad he wants to be here, showed he wanted to be a PED user, and... he's gone for 6 weeks, and if you want to get out of a contract of an aging corner who still looked like he could play last year, but you get a young guy in Jalen Ramsey who might bring a little fire like that, and maybe that's needed, maybe it's not. Do you want to make a straight-up move?
You know what? Honestly, to answer your question, no. I don't want to do that for Patrick Peterson, right? I realize that Jalen Ramsey is younger, Basin Onions. I understand that. But again, you have to ask yourself, at what cost? at what cost? I don't think Jalen Ramsey is not worthy of being traded for Patrick Peterson. I think absolutely. I think if there's a lot of general managers out there, if you offered one for one, would do that in a heartbeat, because Jalen Ramsey is what, 24 years old? I think he's 24, as a matter of fact. Patrick is what, 29? They would do that, I think, in a heartbeat, especially because you still have a year and a half left on both their contracts. I think there's a lot of people that would do that. I would not, because I think Jalen Ramsey is going to be a continuing problem in a locker room.
The volatility is just too dicey. I would not risk bringing Jalen Ramsey in just based on the volatility alone, just based on a track record already of having contentious relations with teammates and now coaches. And on-field antics, and the guy can't manage his emotions, several incidents already on the field. So, yeah, would he bring an edge to your defense? Absolutely. I mean, Larry, I know last time Cardinals played Carolina, the respect and reverence Larry had, and Jalen Ramsey was really just getting started in his career. But he said that guy's skill set.
He's already been to the Pro Bowl twice, Paulie.
His skill set and his size makes him a top five corner in the league, there's no doubt.
The only thing about this whole thing, when you look at Jalen Ramsey, right? Yes, he can walk up, he can play press man, just like Patrick Peterson can play press man. But Patrick, I think, is a much bigger sample size, obviously, of being able to go out and actually shut down some of the best wide receivers in the National Football League, right? But there's just that wild card with Jalen Ramsey right now that I understand. Todd Wash is the defensive coordinator, not Walsh. Todd Wash is the defensive coordinator,
of course, for
the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they're playing a lot more zone than they ever have. Jalen Ramsey wants to play press man. Jalen Ramsey wants to walk up and play some press man cover. That's where he excels. And I get it. He wants to do it because he's really good at it. But Todd Wash is trying to play more zone cover with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I understand a sense of frustration that is there for Jalen Ramsey. I get it. Pat P, to some degree, went through it last year.
Just going to say, that's yet something else they have in common, because that was Pat P in October of last year. He was sick and tired of the zone cover.
I think the bigger question is, for these two that you guys aren't hitting on, which is more of a problem? Arriving to training camp in a helicopter or arriving to training camp in an armored car?
I would say the armored
car. The armored car? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then you're sticking with Patrick Peterson.
Well, I'm saying, yeah. Okay, right. The helicopter. We all get it. It was a helicopter. It was day one, right? I mean, it's part of the organization. Michael Bidwell's flying the helicopter over from Tempe, of course. We all understand. The armored car, that was all Jalen Ramsey commandeering that.
That's much more ominous if you're a GM and an owner. What exactly does this guy want? What exactly is Jalen Ramsey going to cost us? Because that was the statement he was making. I'm backing up the Brinks truck. I need to get paid.
Paul, I got a great story for you.
Funny.
This was pretty entertaining. We have three televisions. We have four televisions here in the Auction Community Studios.
Not the television ran
today,
again, Doug.
Today we have a record where three of them are working. I don't know what's wrong with the fourth one.
But
on TV3, the NFL Network is on.
Okay.
And in the middle of the not-so-beautiful part of the program, all of a sudden Wolf says, wow, this guy has the Ravens in his power poll. And Wolf never even realized it's Wednesday at 7:30.
No.
Who is the best in the
NFL? You even watched the power poll.
You gotta be kidding me. Why do you do this?
Presented by Sanderson
Ford.
Official partner of the Arizona Cardinals.
It doesn't
Sundays
matter.
Sundays are for family, faith, football, and
really?
Football.
We don't care
to watch Wolf watch a power pole and not realize he's 3 minutes away from a
Nobody
power pole.
Nobody cares.
Number five.
Listen, my power pole is very simple. It goes by what have you done, not what everybody else is trying to think. You win your first two games on the road and score 30 points apiece for the first time in the history of the Doug and Wolf Show. The San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, no.
Have
Doug.
Made a power pole.
No. Stop it, Doug.
You've been eliminated. Somebody take Doug's car keys
Don't
immediately.
Get Are you eliminated. Kidding?
Green Bay is obviously the fifth best team right now. You give Aaron Rodgers a defense, you give Aaron Rodgers, Mike Pettine, and a sound defensive scheme. Put the Packers into number five.
You know what I'm going to do, ladies and gentlemen? I'm going with the Dallas Cowboys.
No.
The star at number five. 2-0 on the season. Ezekiel Elliott coming around looking like the centrifuge of that team as the season unfolds.
They do.
I'm
look,
going with the Cowboys.
They do look really. They look great. The problem is they played the Giants and the Redskins, so no credit.
Number four.
Cowboys are six.
They're six for me too. Paul, you missed on Green Bay. Oh, they're clearly number four.
Right.
After embarrassing Chicago, and then remember what Minnesota did to Atlanta. And yet Minnesota comes to Green Bay and gets beat up. It's time to start remembering what the Packers used to be like. Green Bay is number four.
After watching four quarters in Baltimore on the sideline, the Ravens are number four. If they're going to play that physical defense and they have the run game, and you're telling me Lamar Jackson on 3rd and 11 with 3 minutes to go is going to hit Hollywood Brown on a 41-yard strike, if he's going to do that, they're number four.
You're wrong, because they've only played one NFL game this year, so that's not enough.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, my Buffalo Bills.
No!
What are you talking
Buffalo
about?
My Buffalo Bills, baby! Oh, gosh, have you seen that defense? Have you seen this offensive line? Josh Allen, by the way, a little up, a little down, a little good, a little bad. But my Buffalo Bills all the way from the
horrendous
park. Yep. I'm putting him number four.
Wait. Let
get
me
Wolf
make sure.
A car service, too.
I want to make sure I get this straight. The Giants think the Bills are so bad they bench their quarterback after losing to him, and now you promote him. All right.
Number three.
Listen, you beat Drew Brees and you won again, but you're really good. You're just not as good as the other two. The Rams are the third best team in the National Football League.
And once again, the Rams, I concur, and Jared Goff's career win-loss record, add three, because he has beat down Doug, Wolf, and Dave Pasch.
Basedonians, Jared Goff is...
Say it! Spit it out!
Good. The Rams, number three.
Number two.
Number two, without a doubt. You're the best team in the NFL that isn't coached by Bill Belichick. The Kansas City Chiefs are number two.
You know, this is a tough one, but based on the strength of schedule or lack thereof and the fact that they're a 22-point favorite again this week against the Jets, guess what, Patriots? We don't care what your final score and combined numbers are. You're number two just based on strength of schedule.
Wow.
Patrick Mahomes, Basedonians, is a franchise quarterback. Ron Wolfley reporting, the Chiefs, number two.
Number one. Numero uno.
Unbelievable.
Paul mentioned it. I agree the strength of schedule is not good, but they've allowed 3 points this year in eight quarters. The New England Patriots are the best team in the NFL.
Not only are the Chiefs the best team in the NFL at number one, but when they add Jalen Ramsey, they're going to be a juggernaut in the AFC.
I've heard that rumor. Yeah, I'm with you.
Brady. Pat's number one.
The Doug and Wolf NFL Power Poll.
So you have Buffalo in it, and they have their home opener. They had two road games in the same stadium. That was kind of weird to start the season. And then they host the Bengals right now.
Here we go. 3-0, baby. Looking good right now. Good.
Wait, did you just make a prediction?
No, I did not
make a prediction.
Did you
just affront the athletic process?
I did not
make a
prediction. I didn't.
Wait. Here's their record.
No, I was emoting.
Their record says 2-0, and you just announced 3-0. Well, they haven't played game three yet.
I was emoting as a fan. That's all I'm saying. I was emoting right there. There was no prediction.
I see. Coming up next, the Arizona Diamondbacks. What? It's the Marlins. That's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Diamondbacks up 4-2 last night. Had a nice little comeback.
Three occupied, first, second, and third. Ground ball down to third. That's a fair ball into the corner. Extra bases, and it's going to clear the bases. Maybe. Here comes Birdie around third, flying to the plate, no throw. That is a three-run double, and it's now a ball game that finds the Marlins on top 5-4.
Diamondbacks get the first two outs in the sixth inning and then load the bases with Marlins before Rojas hits that RBI double, and the Diamondbacks get shellacked by the Miami Marlins 12-6 to go right now 2-4 on the year against the Marlins, with a day game starting at 12:40 today. They could actually end the season 2-5 against one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball history.
Oh, my goodness. Honestly, right now, let's hope that does not happen, okay? Just watching the game, it was just a reminder of just how positive I've been on the Diamondbacks for the most part all season long, and especially after the trade deadline. I'm sorry. It's hard to be negative. I'm looking at the Diamondbacks and all of their struggles, and yet all I could think of is, you know what, honestly, I'm so positive on the Diamondbacks right now, I don't care what they do the rest of the way. They're out of it. We all know they're out of it. That's been declared right now, right? They're out of it. Maybe not mathematically, but I think
logically,
we all understand they're out of it. Yet, it's almost like grunge music, ladies and gentlemen. When I listen to grunge music, I can't help but think of the light in my own life because of the darkness that was out there, because of what I experienced back in my own dark days. I cannot help but think of the light. The same thing when I watch the Diamondbacks play, ladies and gentlemen. I think of the positivity, at least in the Wolf League compound, when I think of this team going forward, because of the fact you lost Paul Goldschmidt. Well, you traded him. You traded Zach Greinke. You lost A.J. Pollock and Patrick Corbin, of course. You lost these guys that were staples, pillars in that clubhouse. And yet you stayed competitive. And not only did you stay competitive, but you rebuilt the farm in the process. And the light, speaking of light, looks great for next year, in my opinion. We'll see.
Everything you said is logical. I just struggle with the, it's the Marlins.
that made it even more beautiful.
Everything you said is fair about the future. I'm not blasting it. There's nothing about me that can be positive when you're not good enough to beat the Marlins. And it doesn't matter whether you have AAA guys out there and they have AAA guys out there, then your AAA guys aren't beating the Miami Marlins. And whenever you get to a point in the season when the manager argues we're not quitting, that's scary because maybe you are.
Well, we're realists, yes, but we're also dreamers, and we feel like anything can happen in sports, and that's the beauty of this game that we're in. And we can only take it day by day. We know what happened in New York. That was a devastating series for us. Everything was moving.
Listen, I can't stand that stuff. I don't know what else Torrey Lovello should say, but what I don't like about it is don't tell me you're still dreaming and leave Jimmy Scherfy in the ballgame that long. I have zero problem, and I'll defend Torrey Lovello on this, because I got a lot of tweets yesterday and emails, people upset that Jimmy Scherfy was left in when he's getting blown up. If you're thinking you're in it and you're still going to talk positive, we're this, then that's horrible managing. You got to get Jimmy Scherfy out of there. He was horrific. And Jimmy, if your parents are listening, I think you're a great kid. Okay? The rest of your life, you're going to be a great man in the game. Whatever you do, you're a great dude. Doesn't change the fact that you continually have opportunities at the major league level and you've proven you're not a major league pitcher. I hope it changes. I root for you every time you get on that mound. But you're just not good enough right now. And Torrey Lovello left you in. That's 100% the right move if it's about 2020. If it's about, young man, you got to prove whether or not you're in the cards for us next year. You are totally right, Torrey Lovello, and I defend him for it. And I can't stand you saying, well, we're dreamers. We're still in this. We're not fighting, or we're not going to stop fighting. We're going to – no, that shows –
yeah, I got no problem.
You're not fighting.
I got no problem with that once again, because you know what? He's not standing up in front of his players in the clubhouse saying, you know what? We're dreamers. That's what we're doing. We're still dreamers. He's not saying that to the guys that are in the clubhouse. And whatever a guy says, whatever a coach says, a manager, whatever they say to the media, that's one thing. I really don't care. I don't. I mean, I would like my coaches, managers, to be truthful. I would. I would love for them to just be honest. At the same time, we all know you've got to speak median. You have to some degree, or people will take whatever you say and take liberties and run with it.
I've never had a beer with Torrey Lovello, but I do have the feeling he is being honest. I mean, I think he is the type of person that gets angry at night and wakes up the next morning and says, God is great. I've got an amazing job as a manager of a Major League Baseball team. I love Phoenix, Arizona, and we're going to win today. But it's the Marlins.
It's the Marlins. But the darkness is great, is it not? The darkness.
There's nothing darker than the Marlins, and you can't beat them.
That's right. I sit around, ladies and gentlemen, and I actually run. I get on the treadmill, and I run to grunge music. That's what I run to, right? And as I'm running on that, all I think is the Lord God, who totally freed me from the darkness I was surrounded by and in back in my dark days. I listen to grunge to think of God. Now think of that for a minute.
I don't
think
God listens to grudge.
It is a beautiful juxtaposition to me in my house in the Wolf League compound. But I can also tell you right now, watching him lose to the Marlins again, here it is, this team that has superseded every expectation, at least to me, watching them lose to the Marlins. Oh, just the disgustingness of it all.
And a shot to center. Back on it goes LoCastro, and it's over his head.
It was the greatest darkness so far. In this stretch in September.
First one to Brinson. Popped up. Shallow center. That ball might drop, and it will.
The greatest darkness continued, did it not, as we watched them.
And there's a drive to right field. That ball will get down.
We watched them lose to the Miami Marlins.
Miguel Rojas against Taylor Clark on the 3-2. And a line drive, base hit. That'll score a couple more.
But how can you be negative when you hear this? You can't, ladies and gentlemen. Luke Weaver may pitch this weekend, right? Yes!
The Marlins sent 9 to the plate in their 5-run 7th. And this one in the air to deep left field by Holiday. Rojas looks, and it goes out of here.
That was the backup
catcher. Do you know
catcher,
who else is scheduled to pitch in that series against the Padres, ladies and gentlemen? Zach Gallen.
The 1-0. On the way. And a ground ball past the pitcher to the second baseman. Flores out at second. No. Well, the throw to first was very late. Prado comes in to score. The 12th run of the night for the Marlins.
Even Prado's not going to bring me down. And like most people, Zach Gallen, I am bullish on the prospects of that kid turning into an excellent starting pitcher. Why did you play that?
Because we're all screaming in agony after losing to the Marlins.
How would it's over, ladies and gentlemen.
No, we got another game to lose today at 12:40.
I know. I know you want to go Sly Stallone and say, nothing is over, but it is over.
You're going to go 2-5 against the Marlins.
Hey, listen. Nobody's going to remember going 2-5 against the Marlins, right?
The Marlins would not win the Pacific Coast League this year.
It's bad. There's no doubt about it. It's bad. But I have a hard time being negative with the Diamondbacks, thinking about what has transpired this year. And you also locked up Mike Hazen. The freak show, Mike Hazen. Locked him up.
Hey, if they don't figure out, if they're taking it easy against teams like the Marlins, guess what? 2020 is not going to be any better.
I think 2020 is going to be a lot better because I think there's going to be some more moves.
Coming up next. We need rebooted after watching every run just go by in our head. The Marlins are on the bases, and we've got the Rush Hour reboot next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.